Episode 6, Consistency in Action. Welcome to your Best Life Ever podcast. I am your host, Justin Thomas, and this is the podcast that is committed to helping you dominate this life, to help you get from wherever you are to where you want to be. My goal is to help you get breakthrough, learn new skills, and create lifelong habits that will help you live your best life ever. In today's episode, we will be talking with musician Nate Botsford. We will discuss his keys to success, how he consistently keeps pushing and staying consistent in achieving his goals. We'll talk about his trials and successes and what he does to live his best life ever. If you're a musician or anyone who wants real keys to consistency and hard work, you'll want to stick around till the end of this one. What is going on, everyone? We are here with Nate Botsford. How you doing, Nate?
Good, good. What's up, everybody?
How do you like the digs? Do you like the studio?
Pretty ritzy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of a big deal.
You even got a dartboard in here.
Yeah. You know what's cool about dartboards? I can put faces on them. They're magnetic. So, and you know what others point that we talk about all the time is having a train. There's a train that goes by, as you know, we had it a few minutes ago. I kind of use that as my commercial segment.
And it helps keep you on track.
Yeah. So you're in the middle of a sentence and you feel the whole house rumble. Well, it's a house office. You know what I'm saying? Then you can just go to segment. We can go to commercial.
It's great.
Makes the spontaneity of it all.
Yeah. And it keeps you from derailing.
It's good. Yes, it is true. And with me being all over the place, keeps me on track. Otherwise, I just talk forever like I'm doing right now.
Yeah,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. So if you have not ever heard of Nate before, Nate has been playing an instrument since he's been 5 years old when his dad gave him a guitar. Is that what he gave you?
He only gave me a guitar a little later in life, but he gave me a little popcorn maker when I was little. Oh. I made that into a guitar.
Oh, there you go. So you average play probably what, 300 shows a year, kind of fluxes less, you know, the bigger deal you go, the less you're playing, but you've played from everything from, I don't know, weddings, funerals, Applebee's, you've played it all, right?
Yeah. I mean, when you're at starting musician like I was 10 years ago, you just play anywhere that'll let you sit down and play your music for people.
That's awesome. Nate's played the stage with everyone from Eric Hutchinson, Bare Naked Ladies. I love If I Had $1 Million. That was awesome.
It's a great tape.
Yeah. Ingrid Michaelson, Lucas Graham, that ever since I'm 7 years old.
That's the one.
Do I sound like him?
I mean, you're pretty dang close.
Yeah, that's awesome. Lone Star and Need to Breathe. His songs have received regular rotation play and won numerous awards, including the 2015 Project Aloft National Songwriting Artist of the Year, which was an amazing, amazing thing that you actually entered our theme song, right? That This Is Your Moment. That was a song that you recorded with Billy Mann after that.
That was when it came out of it, yeah.
So, and Billy Mann, just to go, he's a producer for what?
Pink.
For Pink. I've heard of her.
I have too.
So let's get it started. See what I did there? That's her song.
Yeah.
It's 10 o'clock, just in case you didn't know. Anyway, so your last full-length album was Hourglass.
Correct.
You produced that. It came out in 2014. The thing that was cool about that, you know, when we say that, you know, it's 2014, it's been 5 years, but you produce so many songs. The question I had for you was, is that, you know, typically, you know, over all the years of people producing albums and what we see on TV about getting a producer and doing your own album, it seems to me that the industry's changed a little bit. Am I right with that? I mean, is it the typical get a promoter, they get you, you record the album, and then you produce it, and then you go do all that stuff? Or is it changed because of social media and the way that you have access to people?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely changed over the last, you know, even the last 10 years, even the last 5 years.
it used to be such like a systematic, you go into a studio and you track every instrument separately, and you you know, spend all the money to do that, and then you hire a producer and an engineer and a mix engineer, master engineer, and a lot of the elements are still the same, but with the way technology has advanced, you know, a lot of guys, especially in Nashville, will just sit down in a room with a couple songwriters and a what they call a mix guy, and they'll build just an entire track in one day, just with like a laptop and a guitar, and then everything else is just done, you know, through computer, through sounds, and so it looks very different. And now you can send tracks. I can record a song here and have a bunch of Nashville guys play on it just by sending all the files over to them. They play, they send it back. And so you don't need to be in the same location, which is pretty cool nowadays.
So is it just about getting to know the right people? Or, I mean, because, I mean, you see these, you know, the music, the American Idols, The Voice, all those things, which we can get a little more into, which I want to touch base on that here in a minute. But, I mean, how do you become encouraging to somebody who is an artist who wants to get going and doesn't know where to start and is struggling to feel like they are never going to make it because they don't know anybody? Or, I mean, where does that come from?
There's definitely like little hints and suggestions and stuff, you know, that I'd give somebody or that someone has given me. But even if you don't know where to start, I think the key is just you start. And
just taking action, just going.
Yeah, and whatever that looks like, for me, it just looked like going and sitting outside a Starbucks and playing, or sitting outside a restaurant and playing, whether they allowed me to or not. For some people, it's going to be just record a YouTube video on your cell phone in your room of you singing, and that's kind of your first intro into allowing people to see you as a musician, as an artist. I think the key is you just start, just whatever that looks like, you just start.
Well, and I think that that's, you know, we always talk about your gifts make room for you, right? And so the truth is that a lot of people, please correct me if I'm wrong, are just doing this because they love it, correct? Like, yeah. you just play, like, for example, in American Idol right now, there's that Alejandro who got, he should have won, but I see why they did it. They picked Lane Hardy because he's got the, anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
But Alejandro, his talent, I mean, like, literally, Luke Bryan was saying, I don't even have the right to judge you. Like, mm-hmm. Your gifts make room for you. So he had no intention of being like, oh, well, this is going to be the plan. I want to get famous. He was just so in love with the music that when the opera, you'd rather be, you know, ready and do the work before you have the opportunity than have the opportunity before you're ready, right? And so, you know, one of the things that has inspired me about you is, you know, we all have our strengths and weaknesses, and this podcast really helps people get from wherever they are to wherever they want to be. And one of the things that I would love people to get from your story is your commitment. We've been friends for I don't even know, a long time, probably 6-7 year or something like that. I don't know. I just want to say a big number to act like I know.
We can round up to 10.
Okay, cool. We'll go there. And I would like to say at times I would consider myself one of your bigger fans. Is that
there,
true?
Yeah.
I'm kind of like a little schoolgirl sometimes. No. But the reason why I say that is that I've just seen your heart. And, you know, the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hour rule is saying that, hey, like, once you've done that for that period of time, you become a professional. He sees it. That's when you have key success in an area. And by practicing a specific task, you know, 20 hours a week for 10 years, you've easily been doing that, right?
Yeah.
And so that makes the little things of playing, someone says, hey, will you sing All the Single Ladies, and you can just bust it out. I mean, the things that I've seen you do are absolutely amazing. So do you think that when someone's playing outside of Starbucks and they're just playing to play, they're just wanting to see that their music's touching people's hearts, right?
Yeah.
And so when you're getting into larger stages, that can easily get lost, that love that you once had that got you into this? Or does it even just just expound the bigger the stage?
I think everybody's different. I think for me, the love of music has always been there, and it is my job and it is my career. But above that, there's like a magic that comes with music that I can't find anywhere else. And I think that's the key, is whether I'm, you know, playing for three people or whether I'm playing for a couple hundred people, there's just a sense of like purpose. And so it doesn't, you know, to answer your question, it doesn't really go away with the bigger stages. It's easy to get more distracted and to lose sight of that sometimes. But I think in the end, it all has to come back to just the love of music. Otherwise, especially in this industry, it's way too easy to give up with the discouragements that come with not just music, any industry. But if you really aren't passionate about it, at some point you're going to burn out. And I think the discouragements will get to you if the love of that isn't there.
I was listening to a pep talk. That's one of my favorite apps. If you've never heard of Pep Talk, download it. It's awesome. They take all the collaboration and motivation videos and they put it together. But they did one on The Rock. And The Rock was talking about, so I don't know if you know this, but The Rock's done probably like more movies. I mean, we see it all the time, but he's done more movies like a year than the top four people underneath him in movie productions have combined. Like, he's just been at everywhere.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And he was just talking about his moment on WrestleMania where he was headlining and how he would always keep his imaginary back up against the wall of like just remembering like the doubters, where he came from, where he started. So like when he was almost taking the stage of WrestleMania and wrestling for granted, he could remember back to where he started to keep him driving forward. And I think that there's a lot of that like success, you know, leaves clues. And I think that we do that to get there. And then you get there, then you're like, oh, so I think for you, you're, you know, just really getting ready to come into your own, which is really exciting. And you have been doing this, you know, people say, oh, this guy just blew up. But the people who really see you go, dude, this guy's been doing this for years, every coffee shop and Applebee's from here to Kansas, actually farther than Kansas.
Sometimes,
so,
yeah.
So speaking of those shows, today is an awesome day. You got a show tonight. Today is May 24th. You're playing in Portland. Today being one of my favorite days ever. You know what today is?
Friday.
Yes, it is. But today is also my daughter's 13th.
Little Ayla is in the teens.
13, I know. She had the whole day planned where Braden's like, my son is easy cheese. She knew exactly what she wanted. And I got all inspired for his birthday. And when he was gone, I cleaned his room for him, which I don't ever do, but I did. Like, it was just kind of, you know, when you come home from school and it's your birthday.
Yeah.
It was my way of saying, hey, you know what? And so she came in last night and she said, so you remember you did clean Braden's room for his birthday. So, and I was like, are you kidding me right now? I've got Nate Botsford coming in tomorrow. I've got to get prepped. But anyway, so your show tonight.
Show tonight.
What time?
We start at 9 o'clock.
Ponderosa Lounge in Portland. If you've not been to Ponderosa Lounge, check it out. It is a cool atmosphere for dancing and country and the whole swinging around, right?
Totally.
And then you had an amazing announcement yesterday that was on your social media, Facebook, all the above, which you can find Nate on. You're on Spotify, right?
Spotify,
Pandora, Facebook,
Instagram.
Yeah.
Pandora.
Yep, you can follow him. He's got a ton of stuff. So tell us about your announcement on August 25th.
August 25th, yeah. We've been trying for this probably for the last 2 to 3 years, but one of my country like guys I really look up to is Brett Young, and his people finally reached out and gave me the opening spot at the Brit Festival in Jacksonville, Oregon. on August 25th. So we're pretty psyched about that coming up.
That is awesome. And so you would classify your style right now as country, right? Correct?
It's very country, a little bit of Americana in there, a little bit of singer-songwriter, but...
And it's hard to, when you kind of got that style where you have that flexibility, it's good to be locked into something. And I think country does suit that. And I think the state of country has changed a lot.
Very much, yes.
I think the twangy, just talking about your dog died and whatever, you know, whatever is gone, which is good. I mean, it has its place. And I think that, you know, I've become more and more of a liking a lot more country music now because I've been following you from... local radio station, The Bull's been doing a contest that they made a mistake and put you on because now they can't get you off because you keep winning week after week after week. You're like a, what, six-time champion there or something like that.
Yeah.
Kind of a big deal. And so the thing is that they have taught me some of these people that I don't ever know in this industry, but there's so much talent out there. That I would think that people like, now you said you're, what is it? Low Cash, right? Is that
opening for Low Cash next Friday?
Okay. So, and there's just so many people like that, that you're going to be starting to get. Now what's happening when you're getting with these, when you're opening for these people, is it just go sing your set, get to know them, but you're networking, right?
Yeah, and it's always hit or miss. Sometimes, you know, the headlining act doesn't even know you exist. And other times you get one-on-one FaceTime with them and you get to interact and ask questions and get advice and best case scenario, like exchange contact information and, you know, try to hook up in Nashville.
Yeah. And then you just kind of go from there. And it goes back to what we were just talking about a minute ago. I mean, if you've got the talent, your gifts are going to make room for you. And I keep saying totally. That because it's like, just give me an opportunity. And if you just take enough swings and reps, it's not about just trying to do it right. So speaking of that, who would you say is probably the most famous person in your phone since you've got all these people?
I mean, everyone's idea of fame. I don't have a
ton. Who's the most famous person on your phone?
It'd have to either be the Need to Breathe guys or Lone Star.
Yeah.
From Lone Star.
Those are pretty good. Do you find yourself listening to when you're just driving down the road?
I've become a big fan of, I don't know if my phone glitches out or if everybody's phone. I'll go to Spotify and I'll just search for a song that I know that I like and I'll play it. And if you just let it keep playing, it'll just like play random similar artists. But then you just start like going down this trail of people you've never heard of. You can find a lot of really cool music. It's kind of like a roulette of country music.
I was curious that about you because I'm always calling you and saying, hey, have you heard of this? And you're like, oh, yeah, they're good. I've been listening to them for years. And it's like I can never be ahead of you in the music curve. Right. But it doesn't matter what it is. And especially with like, so your background where we were part of a church plant together.
Yeah.
And your faith is a big deal to you. It is, as it is to mine. You lead worship at a few different churches, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And, that I think is, I would assume that would have helped you with your performance anxiety, you know, any things that the average person would have, you get in the rep of doing it so much. Has that being on the stage and all that stuff helped you in the big stage at all as far as?
Yeah. I mean, they're very different, like as far as like performance and then leading worship, but either way you're in front of people, either way you're playing and singing in front of people. So from that aspect, because I've been singing in the church since I was, you know, 12, 13 years old. It's been a little more natural for me. I still get nervous sometimes, but being in front of people, singing in front of people, playing my songs in front of people has come much more naturally and easy. I think because of my church upbringing.
That's good because I think that, I just think that if you lose your nerve, then it's not fun for you anymore, right? That's totally part of the rush of doing it all. But your humor and wit when you're on stage, especially in a larger venue, is the best part. Like sometimes, you know, you don't even I'm saying you, I mean the figurative you. You're up there and you say something funny and the whole place laughs and you're like, I meant it to be kind of funny. I didn't expect you to explode, but you're able to pull so much of that humor when you're nervous or whatever those things. And yeah. I always found that that's pretty cool. And so, you know, it said when you started young, what originally inspired you to, I mean, did you just pick this up and then just go, or was there a musician or a friend, or what got you going in this?
Both my grandparents, my grandpa on my dad's side, my grandpa on my mom's side, both were incredible musicians, played piano, wrote songs, sang, more of just like a hobby, and they played in church, but it just really inspired me to start, just loving music. And so I started piano lessons when I was like 5 years old. And then, like I said earlier, my dad gave me this old popcorn popper. And if I don't know if you've ever seen them, they kind of look like a guitar, like the shape of a guitar, because you'd like hold them over the fire.
So oh,
like
yeah,
the
yeah.
Big,
yeah.
Where you throw the kernels in and big handle. So I would just like stretch different sized rubber bands across it to sound like guitar strings as best I could. But I just like found a love for performing and a love for like music and what it does to a person, even as like a kid. I remember sitting down just for, you know, hours at the piano and just either making up songs or just going through an old songbook and playing everything I could. But there's just a joy that came with it and kind of sparked this love of music. And then, when I, you know, started writing my own music, I really found a passion and a love for that. And my family's somewhat musical. My dad plays guitar a little bit and sings. My older brother is a great musician, singer, out in Oklahoma City. But so I was kind of around music, but I just decided when I was like, you know, 13, 14, that's just all I wanted to do with my life.
You've made a couple references to the piano, but I don't see you or hear you do that very much. What is that?
Well, it turns out guitar is a little easier to haul around than a piano.
True statement.
But that is on the goal list to be able to start bringing a keyboard with me everywhere.
So, do you have certain people that you're collaborating with? I mean, I see you on videos and kind of stuff like that, where you did a remake of the Bradley Cooper. Tell me something good. Wait. Was that song? I saw you do a.
I have done that one, and we did the "Meant to Be" by.
Oh, that's what it was. It was "Meant to Be."
Yeah,
yeah, and she sounded exactly like her.
Oh, yeah,
and you sounded way better.
Well, I don't know about that. No, it was a fun collab.
I'm just teasing. It was good. It was good. So, the part of your, like, you know, you gave my son lessons and still do here and there. Whenever you can, and I can bribe you or pay you to do it. But one of the things that he told me that he really enjoys from taking lessons from you is you can hear and like your ability to, the little stuff that isn't on paper, like just shows your love for it. Would you define your lyrics or your, what part of the whole thing, the performance, the creation, the writing, the produce, like what part of the whole creative process is your favorite?
That's a tough one. I mean, I love the creative, like writing process and everything that goes into that. I mean, I guess a couple weeks ago is a perfect example. I went on a little writing retreat with some Nashville people. We all went over to Bend, and we spent 4 straight days just writing and like pouring all of our emotions and stuff into these songs that we wrote. And then at the end of the week, we did a small house show for like, 50 people, and we performed all those songs. And seeing how those songs relate to people and how people react to them, it's such a cool feeling just to know that we created those things and caused this emotion, you know, this emotional response from people. Because it is such a, like, songwriting is such a personal thing. I mean, the only thing I have to compare it to is, you know, I don't have kids, but you,
like from birth to preschool, you raise your kid, you know, the best you can, and then you send them out into the world, and just here you go, world. Hope you like this thing that I created.
Seriously.
And that's how I feel like with songwriting is you create this thing, and then you go perform it for people, and you know, it's not always this amazing emotional response you get, but sometimes it is, and it's such a fulfilling, you know, purposeful feeling that's kind of probably the highlight of the whole process.
I think for you, I know you're humble about it, but you're an amazing songwriter. Like I give the backstory and I didn't really tell you I was going to do this, but, we have on Hourglass, there's about, I don't know, 4 or 5 songs that you wrote specifically for people.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. One of them is a Mari.
Yep.
That is a song of a close friends of ours whose niece had cancer, right? And she ended up eventually losing that battle. But you know, that song held her together at 7, 8 years old. Pearl was for someone who had cancer, correct? Mm-hmm. Or, and she called it her little Pearl, and
yeah,
and that's why you wrote that. Just so many songs just on there. Just you wrote those, and they're amazing songs that people, that's the reason why promoting Hourglass, when you know the backstory behind it, those songs become so much better to the listener. For example, I was looking at, I went to a funeral years back for a family friend of ours, and we were sitting there and watching, you know, the promo videos that they do, for, you know, when people put a montage together for a funeral. And when they were doing the song, they had one of your songs doing it, and there's no way you knew anybody that was at this. And they were playing Goodbye For Now, which is on your Hourglass that you wrote for friends of ours that are really close that had loss in their family. And you know, those type of songs, that type of writing has been so inspiring for me to keep going when your chips are down, when you're not getting what you want, when things are going. And, you know, Goodbye For Now, you know, I think that you had told me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that you didn't mean for that to be, you didn't want it to be a funeral montage. That's not what you, am I correct? That's not what you're writing it for. You're writing for just those people that you care about. And so my point is that when you're doing things with the right heart and the right motive, things spur out whether you want them to or not. And I think that that's been amazing. And so when you go into that creative process of writing, do you just kind of just pour it all out there, or like what do you usually do is your process? So you just kind of let it flow, or tell us a little bit about your writing process. First off, do you like it? Even though you're good at it, do you like it?
I do. It's incredibly frustrating, as is any that craft that you try to master. But I do love it. I mean, every song's different. Sometimes it comes from a concept. Sometimes it comes from a word. And then other times it comes from a story. So a lot of the songs on Hourglass just came from a story of someone close to me or someone I know about. And just kind of turned, you know, as best I could, those emotions and those feelings into lyrics and into melodies. And then a lot of times it just, I like to write songs that have like meaning behind it, and I'd like to, you know, that have a connection with it, not just a bunch of lyrics on paper.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to connect like a feeling with a lyric or with a concept, and then expand from there.
And you do a great job with that.
And it's a work in progress, but yeah, I love just the different ways. There's no, you know, written instruction handbook on how to write songs. There's, you know, no right or wrong way to start. And I love that about songwriting, is it's always different and it's always a new experience and it's always changing and evolving. And
when I think that with your newest release, which you just released last week, called, what's it, tell us about it.
Tiny Little Voices.
We're going to listen to it here in a second. We're going to do a little quick soundbite on it. But what was the writing process for that song? I mean, because that, well, actually, before you do that, don't forget, we're gonna take a second and we're going to give you guys a quick taste on that. And then we're also, well, actually, you know what? Let's do this. Let's go to break. Train hasn't came yet. So let's take a quick break, hear from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Tiny Little Voices and everything else you're doing.
Awesome.
Welcome back to Your Best Life Ever podcast. We are here with singer, songwriter, aficionado, man of all things, Nathan Botsford. And we were, before we went to break, we were talking about your, you know, new song that you just released called Tiny Little Voices.
Yep.
Let's check that out real quick and listen to that and see what we think.
You try to fake a smile, but there's tears behind those eyes. Well, if people only knew what was going on inside. Sometimes I wanna run, sometimes I wanna scream, sometimes I wanna punch the mirror staring back at me. No matter what you're feeling, just know that you can tell. And all those tiny little voices go to hell.
Oh, that is so good. I love it. So, what was that song inspired by? Where did that come from? Because those are some powerful lyrics.
Yeah, that song, that one actually was not supposed to be played for anybody. I sat down on a stage once and just wrote out my frustrations. And I think in anyone's life, you can kind of get to a point where you control which influences you allow.
There's the train.
And there's the train.
We're just going to run with it. Keep going.
Just run with it.
Songs that you allow. I'm sorry.
I just got to a point where I realized I had allowed so many negative voices from my past or from stuff people had told me to control how I moved forward with my future. And then I realized the biggest thing standing in my way was my own self and the voices and the negative impacts that I allowed to control that. And so I sat down and I just wrote this song, kind of just a frustration song. I think I thought to myself while I was writing, I was like, man, all these, you know, this voice could just go to hell. And I ended up writing the song and played it for a buddy one night. I don't remember why or how. And he had told me, he's like, man, people got to hear this song. It's more relatable than I think you understand. So I started playing it for people, and it turns out a lot of people have been able to resonate with it. And I
think that's a key point that I'm looking forward to talking about, because I think that when you have people that are relating with something, we just talked about a minute ago with Goodbye For Now. It became, you know, a lot of people were playing the funerals because it relates to that. Yeah. But the bigger picture of what I'm talking about is that it's easy to peg a song into a certain thing. But what I got from this, and the point that I really want to make with this song, is that, yes, people with mental health or especially, I think, this month's Mental Health Month.
And it is, yeah.
See, there we go. So, you know, from the mental health side of things, that's awesome. Like, I can get that. But what about just the good angel on your shoulder and the bad angel on your shoulder, right? Like, the times that you listen to that saying, you're not good enough. You can't do this. No one in your family has ever been anything. Absolutely. Those are the tiny little voices. That doesn't mean you're crazy. That doesn't mean you're dealing with mental illness. It's just the things that hold you back from being everything you want to be. Because you know, the truth is that that's what this whole podcast is about. It's about being your best life ever. And you can't do that unless you're able to fight through those walls. And so, you know, that tiny little voices is awesome. Like, it's everything that I've seen. So, you know, for example, you know, I got to take credit for dragging you down to trying out. This is years ago. We tried out for American Idol, correct?
Yes.
You and I at 5 a.m. went down downtown Portland, and we played. We went all the way down. We went down there, and we were probably, what, 40th in line, 30th in line? We were there something at 5. Like that, yeah. And every single person, no, 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 no. And I was just like, I was like the proud mom when I were dad, when I was on The Voice or something, that standing there with Carson Daly when they're watching the person up there. And you knew in your talent, but we get up there and you sang a cover that you did of Billie Jean, which we'll play here in a second. So everyone else can hear it.
She was more like a beauty queen from a movie screen. Say, I don't mind, oh, what do you mean? I am the one who would dance on the floor or in the round. She told me her name was Billie Jean and she caused a scene. And every head turned with eyes a dream of being the one who would dance on the floor and around.
I feel like if you have a song when you walked up there that you made yours, and you go up there and you just play it, people feel your heart. And when they gave you a yes, you were the first one of the day, and actually one of like maybe I think 5 or 6 they pulled out that day. It was just like so amazing to seeing that you just love for that and your passion. And then we, you know, ended up running around and I was all promoted, like I was so excited. Yeah. And that process I think was good for you to see the whole, I mean, that was kind of a big moment too, right? Like where you were totally able to kind of see did that open your eyes a little bit to the big picture going through that American Idol process?
Yeah, I mean, probably in more ways than one. There was a sense of validation, I think, that came with it. And then on the total flip side, I think when a lot of people get like sent home from Idol, they allow that to determine their self-worth as an artist or as a musician. Whereas I pretty quickly realized I had a choice to make, you know, whether I let that experience deter me from pursuing the thing I'm most passionate about, or if I let that experience kind of light a fire in me to keep moving forward.
And I saw you fight through that, because I'm not going to play and down. You're bummed out with totally. That. You were totally, totally bummed out. And I couldn't believe it too, because like you flew to Kansas City, and you know I was just, you know, call me when it's done. And you call back and you're like, it's a no. And I'm like, what? How? And the point is that it doesn't, that's not the destination. When you're putting it in about that and you're not about enjoying the ride. For example, you come back at this story, we'll just run with this. You come back with this and you go back to all the different places you're playing, Stanford's and Applebee's, all these different places. And then this, out of nowhere, this Aloft competition comes out.
Mm-hmm.
You enter in that, and it's like pouring gasoline on a fire. Everyone just explodes. It was a tight race, but it was actually a really big deal. They flew you out. You got to meet Ingrid Michaelson in New York, right?
Yep.
I think you played together or something like that. Or. Mm-hmm. And then you got all these people you met. So my point is that if you wouldn't have had that process, you wouldn't have been ready at that point. So it's just that, just allowing yourself to enjoy the ride. I think that so many of us get so caught up in saying that the destination is so important. Like, I've got to make what? And yeah. I think it's healthy to help you get there. But if you're just saying, hey, look, you know what, whether, you know, like, God's got a plan for all of us. And it's about better versions of ourselves. It's not about what you look like or fulfilling, because then the voice comes calling. And you'd won this Aloft competition, so you couldn't do the voice, mm-hmm. correct? So you're going to get opportunities, but your decisions are going to shape those things. And I think that all of these things have been just so amazing to watch. And look at what the Aloft thing's done. I mean, it's opened up so many doors. Totally. Don't you agree?
Totally.
And, you know, I think that the hidden songs that you were talking about that you have written and done all that stuff, what do you do with those? Do you just kind of hold them in your deal and some never see the light of day, or like, do you just kind of wait? I mean,
like the rule of thumb is, you know, in Nashville for artists, is you write at, you know, 100 to 200 songs in a year, let's say, then you pick your best 10. And those are the 10 that goes on the album. And really the other, you know, however many hundred or so, like, don't ever see the light of day, and they're just there, you know. And that's kind of the process you got to go through to really get your best work and your best writing out, because eventually you stumble upon a really, really great song.
Yeah.
And that's the one you put out for the world to see.
What is your part of this thing that has kind of, that you saw that has been your least favorite? Like, something that you're like, ah, man, I wish I, like... I know you're probably run across jerk people that are artists that we don't need. You've told me a couple that you've ran into, that some names that are pretty big names that people listening would listen to that would be really know that you were like, maybe I caught them on a bad day or something like that, mm-hmm. but they're complete jerks. But what's the, whether it's just people or what, what's the one part of this whole thing, the fame, the all that stuff that's kind of been like, eh?
I'd say a hard part is that, and I think regardless of what stage you're at in music or in whatever, there's still going to be people who don't care, and there's still going to be people that don't have a response to the thing that you're like pouring out. So, you know, I still play shows to this day, where I'm up on stage pouring my heart and soul out in my music, and people just don't care, and that's just the reality of music. That's the reality of what it is. And I have a choice, you know, at the end of all those, if I let that experience really discourage me, or if I choose to like cling on to the moments that were validating, that assured me of my music and my talent, and then I move forward from that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we see that on American Idol too. You see all these people that are like, remember when Simon was so brutal back in the day? Now yeah. all the judges just tell them how great they are. But yeah. Simon, when he was there, they were like, but? And he's like, well, go back to your family and friends and that tell you you're awesome, but you got work to do. The point that I'm being in that is that you've got to know who you are. Mm-hmm. You've got to stay to that and always be the best version of yourself you possibly can be. And I think that growth, you know, the goal setting, being productive, identifying areas of procrastination, which we just went through in our last couple episodes, just really knowing who you are in your process, and then setting things to constantly, you know, drive, like that I was telling her earlier about the rock having against keeping your back against the wall, I think are key things that I see you do on an average process. So enough about this music. Tell us one thing about you that we would never know.
I mean, there's probably a few things. I'm torn between two. I really love climbing trees. There's like some weird thing in me that I love getting to the top of a tree. And then I also can do the Rubik's Cube in under a minute.
Wow, that's a good one.
It's homeschool years for you.
If anybody wants to Facebook stalk him, there's pictures of him jumping into Christmas trees.
That is true.
That is a very good thing. I've got one for you that I know that most people wouldn't know.
What's that?
You used to be a lifeguard.
I was a lifeguard, man. 10 years I was a lifeguard. I do those water aerobics, jumping jacks to the YMCA. That's awesome.
Did you ever save anybody's life?
I saved a couple lives.
Really?
No CPR, but I did save a couple drowning.
You didn't have any single older women pretending to drown. So the good-looking Nate Botsford would come running like David Hasselhoff in to save him, did you?
No, that's what I was hoping. I was hoping for that Sandlot experience. But
that's right. The Sandlot.
Turns out that's not reality.
Oh, that's good. Thank you so much for coming in. Again, check out his latest release, Tiny Little Voices, on everywhere.
Yeah.
iTunes, Spotify, Pandora. You've got your own Pandora station?
I do.
I heard that that process is pretty tough. Like Pandora, they just don't go giving stations out to anybody, right?
No, they sure don't. No, they've turned down plenty of my stuff before, but we finally got.
And the first song that they put up there was
your intro song.
Yes, that's right. This is your moment. So, you know, the Brinks truck that I backed up to your house to dump all the money that I had to pay to get that, well paid off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do need you to sign the legal documents to make that mine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's totally
potatoes,
good.
Potato.
So again, we've got tonight, Ponderosa Lounge, Portland, Oregon. Even if it's the times past, go check them out either from there. YouTube, he's all over doing covers, his own stuff. Just subscribe and watch the videos as they come out. Do you prefer a social media outlet? Like there's some people that are Instagram people, preferably Facebook.
I'd say Instagram first and then Facebook second.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're just into the music, then head over to Spotify. But if you like some good, funny content, then head over to Instagram.
And then also too, there's a couple songs that I love of yours that are on YouTube that you haven't like made a production wise. Mm-hmm. Last part of this, do you think that you're going to put all this stuff together into an album? You know, I know we kind of talked about that on this episode a little bit, but do you think that you're going to do that? Or are you just going to just keep popping out individual songs and just kind of let it ride?
I'm going to keep on writing and keep on pushing out new stuff, but I do love going back and taking stuff I wrote a long time ago and kind of bringing new life to it. So you never know, that might be coming out in the future.
You got a tour or anything that you're thinking of? I know you did a Montana and Idaho and all the above.
Yeah, it's going to get, I head to Nashville on Sunday night.
Oh, wow.
And then I come back home, then I head to Medford, and then come back home the next day, go to Boise, come back home, and then I go to Arkansas.
And you're just, how are you getting those gigs? I mean,
they're just coming randomly.
Yeah, because after a while, you start to create enough momentum and people start to see you. It's awesome. So, again, thank you so much for coming in. And
totally.
We appreciate having your show. Again, for us, check us out. Same thing. Check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, all those different things. We appreciate you coming in and look forward to what you got going next. Thanks, Nate.
Thanks for having me. See you guys later.
Thanks for tuning in today. I know your time is valuable and you chose to spend it here with us. Please do not forget to subscribe and download these episodes if they serve you, because it does help us. You can find us on all the major platforms: iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, SoundCloud. Remember to go to justinlthomas.com. There you can email me, give me feedback on things you'd like to hear about. Find our show notes, coaching programs, downloads, everything you need to have your best life ever. See you next time. This is your time.